Hey. Wow, we've got plenty of people here. How are you guys doing? Good? You like to head? Yes, perfect. Okay, welcome to my session. My name is Paula Januszkiewicz, and what I'm doing for a living, it's security. So I'm a pretty boring person, I must tell you, because security is like everywhere, in my hobby, in my work, when I'm dreaming about security. So this is basically myself. I'm a penetration tester. And I do have my own company that is called Secure, and I'm also partnered in the company that is based in US. It's called iDesign. So we are doing all the different related security projects. And basically, if I could summarize myself, what my job consists of, it's I'm more on the good side rather than on the bad side, but for the bad purpose. Yes? So whenever, for example, I see the infrastructure, I jump in. And I basically find out if you can do so-called hacking. I'm not really a fan of this word, but still, normally I call it researching. So, couple of things. I'm an MVP, of course, enterprise security. I'm also a trainer. I do have an access to a source code of Windows, which makes me a person that I can answer my own questions. Eventually, I can also ask my husband because he's also the person who has access to a source code of Windows. So this is my background. Okay, so maybe let's begin, and let me tell you a couple of things. What this session is going to be about? So hackers not halted. What is that about? So first of all, we need to discuss a couple of things about why hackers are not halted. What kind of solutions do we have so that hackers are not halted? What kind of situations do we encounter so that hackers are not halted? And a couple of things. The background for this session is very simple. When I'm doing my pen tests, what I've noticed is the culture of work. And this is what I notice every day. So the security culture of users, security culture of administrators. And that's something that we're going to discuss because a couple of things that we've got in our infrastructure, I'm talking about the solution, they are not necessarily managed in a good way. But not because we are lazy or we don't know how to do it, but very often because we are not able to force a certain security solution on the management level. This session is going to be about discussion related to administrators and management people. For example, like giving you example, just like that from the field, USB management. That's something that is super simple from the technical perspective. As administrator, you can say, "Oh, I don't want to do it. USB, turn off." But management don't. They for sure won't like it, right? Can you imagine your CEO having USB turn off? No. Me as well. So this is a problem that does not come from the security subject. It more comes from the management. And we're going to discuss about this kind of relationships. I'm not actually going to scare you, but what I'm going to show you are the typical problems that are coming out from the situation in which we don't manage infrastructure correctly, not because we are doing a bad job, but because the management or maybe our discussion with management is not necessarily going well. Or maybe it's just like a very costly solution. The thing about operating system is very, very simple. It's just a piece of code. So whenever we are thinking about the threats or what we can do, what can happen, it's always a bunch of code. It's very limited. We've got some services, we've got some libraries, we've got some processes, we've got some threads, and everything that works. Doesn't matter if it's SQL, doesn't matter if it's SCCM, whatever. That's something that is actually just a bunch of files working with each other. Database, it's a service. Well, not just that, but database has an instance of the service. So the number of attacks is very limited. And my goal today is to show you one thing, that targeted attacks that are only targeting a certain loophole because you haven't installed an update, this is outdated. It's old-fashioned. What we are doing right now, we are actually fighting the situations in which people commit mistakes because of the organizational problems. USB security that I gave you as an example at the beginning. Yes, we have USB ports enabled, and it does not come from like the statement that it's super not secure, or maybe we can live with that risk, and so on. But if you, for example, disable them, then maybe you will put yourself in a not super comfortable situation. I would like to show you as well the mitigation plan. And don't get me wrong, this session is not about hardening. And there is a special reason for that. The reason why we are not discussing hardening is that every infrastructure is different. Attack is one click. Hardening, it's a bunch of clicks with understanding, with budget, with the typical dependencies in the infrastructure. So, of course, I will tell you what's going to be the mitigation plan, but I won't tell you, oh, whenever you've got SQL running on that privileges, do this, do that, do that. Yes, I won't tell you because I don't know. You know best. So hopefully that out of this session, you will come with some small piece of knowledge that's going to allow you to think through the points of entry in your infrastructure. Is this something that you expected? What? Is this something that you expected? Yes. Perfect. Thank you for that. Come on, aren't you having a lunch or something? More energy. It should be fun. So, agenda. I keep it usually very simple. I decided to divide it into four parts. First, offline. Offline access. This is something that is, we could say, offline access. You could do whatever with offline access. Yeah, but this is an organizational problem. My goal is to show you the techniques that are juicy, that are the ones that whenever you got that thing, you've got a full control. They reward you at the beginning. Here we go, offline access. Yes, for example. And then we're going to discuss online techniques. So for example, is it possible using eventually some vulnerability that I'm going to show you to inject a rootkit in operating system and how to do it? What does it mean to have a rootkit? How we are able to discover it? And this kind of things. And that also comes from the organizational problem. Because maybe we are not up to date. Or maybe we made some small mistake somewhere. Or maybe being not up to date comes from the organizational problem in which we need to, every time we are installing an update, and I exactly know what I'm talking about because this is my customer that does that, you need to actually, using your hand and pen, in an old-fashioned way, type something on paper, can I please install that update? And then it gets approval from the IT management. What? Really? Of course, understood, but kind of old-fashioned. Okay, guys, what is wrong in this picture? Can you see something wrong? I think it's a pretty cool setup, I would say. So, raise your hands if you would like to have server in your toilet. Two people, three, the rest is developers. Because I would like to get a server in my toilet. There's one thing that is wrong in this picture, though. Offline access, that's a good point. I would say that mouse is a little bit too far away, but not that. What I would say is that, well, I could have a server in my toilet, but I will never be able to live with an operating system that is 10 years old. Small detail. So, and again, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying I will never live with an operating system that is 10 years old. This is the only thing. Maybe we should think about organizational changes that's going to upgrade us to maybe a little bit better version. Okay, so let me start with an offline access. But before we're going to jump to it, let me show you one problematic situation. Why hackers are not halted? And for that, I'm going to use one website. And don't get me wrong, it's not that I'm a fan of it, but maybe you're going to need it. Pens for dogs. Forgive me the picture. Some of them are on the edge of acceptancy. For example, this one. Take my breath away. Yes? Romanticism and this kind of stuff. Perfect. So what is the thing? The thing with this website is that they are selling a pretty cool stuff. They got some lace equipment. Okay, whatever. So let's focus on IT-related issues. The thing about this website is that it uses PyPal in the back. But I don't mind, as long as the website is written in a good way. So this is something that this cool company, so I'm in the internet, so after the session they can sue me, yes? No, I won't show actually anything too bad. I'm going to refresh that website, because what I'm doing in the back, I'm using Fiddler. Fiddler, it's a web debugger, free web debugger. You can download this from the internet, of course. And what I'm going to do, my favorite thing that I'm doing when I'm bored, when I'm traveling and sitting in a hotel, free shopping. Rules, automatic breakpoints, before requests. It means that whenever I click on a certain website, I need to approve it. So let me actually go to order. Perfect. And at that point, as you see, the website is doing nothing because Fiddler is asking me for permission. So I'm going to go to inspectors, web forms, and then I'm going to click run to completion. And then, apparently, I do have this order. Oh, not yet. So I need to jump into a couple of places, and I need to enable order website. So I need to go to run to completion, and here we go. This is the form that we have. I need to accept these two things as well, so that I'm able to put my order. And here we go. Great. So as you see, the website loaded. Perfect. If you would like to buy yourself extra small stuff, I don't know, maybe you got an extra small dog, you need to pick some choice. So I'm going to pick, and this is kind of funny, camouflage, and bring me the black leopard baby. Do you recognize this button? Where it comes from? PayPal. Perfect. It means you do a lot of shopping. I recognize the picture as well. Okay, so I'm going to click Add to Cart. Yes? And as you see in the left bottom corner, there's also a link to PayPal. Yes? So I'm clicking Add to Cart. And as you see, I'm jumping to PayPal. And at that certain point, I can click Run to Completion, and I can see what kind of order I'm actually making. So at that certain stage, being connected to PayPal, I am able to modify the price of the black leopard pants and make it worth, did I mention that I'm from Poland? $2. Two funky currency. Run to completion. Perfect. Let's check out what is in the back. We are processing that request. Perfect. Perfect. Run to completion. We are entering the PayPal session. It takes a moment. So we need to, and again, click a couple of times, run to completion. Nobody said it's going to be super fast and slow. We can click that as well. And at some point, we're going to end up with the ready-to-go session in which, oh, come on, faster, I want my pants. Yep. As you see, I made some shopping before. Pow. My pants. Don't do it at home. It's illegal. Okay? I mean, you can try, but don't buy. You will make your own decision. Okay. So here, what do we see here? First of all, I made some small shopping, and these are the same pants. But I decided to allow guys to earn some money. This is the regular value, and this is the Polish value. So if you want, you can influence what PayPal is going to be displaying to you. Try out. There are so many websites that can do it. Yes? The conclusion that comes out of that is that somebody published this website just like that. And they're like, buy our pants. Life is so cool. But on the other hand, you see that this kind of security issue in which we are not really encoding. I'm not even mentioning encrypting, but that's too much. We are not even encoding whatever we are sending to PayPal. It's not PayPal that is wrong here. Don't get me wrong. It's the website that is passing the clear text arguments to PayPal. Okay. Let me go out with this pants. Perfect. And let me close Fiddler quickly. Perfect. So, the thing that we need to discuss is actually offline access. Offline access is something that is so overlooked in vast majority of organizations. Maybe you are using BitLocker, good to go. Maybe you are using like TrueCrypt, fantastic. But if you are not using any kind of offline level, low level encryption, we should ask ourselves a question, why we are not doing it. Think about users. Whenever you are administrator and you are delivering a workstation to a user, think business-wise. which means user needs this application, that application, you are applying some security measurements, security settings, this, that, and offline access. Offline access, that's something that you give to a user as a part of the whole set of business applications that the user was going to use. So it's a package. Here you have. You've got Office, Outlook, and offline access. Everything for you. We should stop thinking like that. We've got so many technologies that are encrypting our disk in the lowest level. BitLocker is available since Windows Vista. That's something that it's accessible, available, and so on. At the same point, offline access can be used for us, as administrators, to, for example, recover yourself from the crash and so on and so on. But the user, it's not the entity that needs that. This should be brought to the level of discussion in every company. User takes the laptop home. Yes? I'm not talking about accountant department ladies. They are usually more happy to click on something rather than do an offline access. But let's say accountant's lady's son. Maybe this guy can do something. And as long as this person is able to offline access, operating system is able to do everything. If, of course, there is no BitLocker or any kind of low-level encryption implemented. At that point, I would like to show you one thing. Because whenever we are discussing this offline access, that's something that allows users to do a lot of things. And even if you think about, my users will never do it. They will. They're waiting. They're, imagine like creepy monsters. And they're going to do the stuff. My users will never do it. Users are super creative. We are forgetting how creative they are. If you lock something, they're going to jump in and they're going to do things and using their own way. Okay, guys, so at that point, we are switching to our first demo, which is related to offline access. And let me switch to my machine here. So my machine here, it's Windows 8. And what I'm going to do in here, I'm going to, here we have Windows 8. I'm going to reboot to installation media, so Windows 8 installation media. So restart. And I'm going to inject the service that is a very, very special service that's going to technically dump every user's password that ever logs in into the machine. Yes? So let's say user is an evil user. He does that thing, yes? And at some point, user says, oh, I don't like this company anyway, so let's do a couple of things and let's figure out what my administrator is thinking about. And let's say this user is cute. User comes to the company, said, oh, my internet is broken. Can you please help me? And the user comes to administrator room. Yes? User is super cute. And you are like, okay, just give me that. I will have a look. And I know what I'm talking about again, because I saw actually that kind of situation. Cute user coming to administrator's room. And this is what happened. Okay. So at that stage, just next, repair your computer, troubleshoot. And this is something that always makes me super laugh, because I need to go to advanced options. Ooh. Ah. Advanced. This is it, yes? Advanced option. Woohoo! Okay, so at that certain point, what I will do, I'm going to jump to the D drive, because D drive, when I go there, it's actually my drive with all the operating system installed. I do have here a folder that is called offline. And in that certain folder, so let me actually enter it, offline, there, I do have two folders. One is containing malware. It already sounds positive. Another one is a malware installer, because we were going to use malware to be working as a service. Pretty typical place for malware. I'm not saying it's always like that, but if you are searching for malware services, it's one of the places that you definitely need to have a look. It keeps it running. Okay, so I'm going to jump to installer. Installer. And then, again, installer. And over here, I do have a bunch of files that are actually going to install the service using offline mode. And I'm going to copy that malware.exe to the C drive so that it stays there. To the C drive because it's comfortable for me. No reason you may put it in a different place. Okay, I'm going to run for that notepad, and I'm going to go to off CMD because I would like to show you what am I doing very briefly. So, copying to the D drive, which is going to be C when I reboot, connecting to the registry using offline mode. I'm using system branch, and I'm using that because in system, you're going to find a configuration of the operating system services. So this is the place you would like to load it, yes? And whenever, for example, you would like to disable group policy processing as a user, you're going to jump to that place as well. Not saying anything. Next thing. I am, at that point, adding a key from the temp.reg, and this temp.reg is going to install me Italiano Servizio Badone. This service is going to query LSA for secrets for every password that the user leaves when the user logs in. I don't want to call it a vulnerability. I don't even want to call it a problem. I would like to call it, maybe not a feature, but an issue. Yes? Okay, so let's just do it. And that service is going to do one thing that I would tell you as a surprise. So, off CMD, let's execute that. Let's verify if everything went correctly. So, operation completed successfully. Yes, we got it. Let me do the last check. Reg edit. And I'm going to quickly connect to file, load Hive, and then I'm going to jump to D drive, Windows, System 32, and I'm going to connect myself to the same registry Hive to verify if the service remains there. And that's something that you will see as well, so that it's going to be loaded whenever we reboot an operating system. Okay, so we got system, open, tra-la-la-la. So we go in here, and then we are picking control set 01. Normally, you will need to check it in select, which one is the current one, but we've got only one, so I don't have much choice. And then I'm going to go to services, and I'm going to query for B service. So at that point, I should have, and I do have, service that is named Badone. Yes? Okay. So let me cancel that. Exit. Continue. And then we are rebooting Windows, not from the CD/DVD, but the regular boot. And I'm going to show you what is the reaction whenever the first user logs in. What I'm referring here right now is the LSA secret. LSA secret, that's something that Aaron was talking, I guess because this is his subject, before me. Allows us to read passwords in a memory. As long as you know how to ask, you can dump the passwords for everybody that logs on to the certain workstation in the clear text. To be sincere, we don't have time nowadays. Yes, we don't fight with cryptography. We don't crack. We don't use the dictionary. We just use the technology issues to be able to read things. So at that point, let me log in as Paula. Perfect. And I'm logging in. And at the same point, I am opening up the website. If you want to check out what is the website? Because the website is online, so everybody knows my password in this room. In a moment. I jump into a log, and I wait for the service to be working. It takes some time, because the service needs to start up. It needs to run, I'm using in the background, WCE. This is the software that is called Windows Credentials Editor. So let me refresh it a couple of times. And let me check if I, in my machine, do have an access to the internet. Oh, maybe this is an issue. I'm going to have it in a moment, I guess. Whenever you reboot a virtual machine, yeah, I am already almost connected, I think. Let me do one quick check out. CMD, ping, WPPL. Okay, so we got it. Perfect. So maybe at that certain point, our website should be perfect. Yes? Thanks. Next person that logs in is going to be the same. You want me to show you? I don't think it's necessary, yes? This is my password. Administrators log in, users got it online, yes? So this is the story. Kind of nice. And the best thing about that situation, so what is the mitigation plan? Obviously, the mitigation plan is going to be related to all the low-level encryption that you've got. So BitLocker is going to be the mitigation plan. We were able to boot up from the certain media, yes? So think about that. Think about that from the business perspective. What do you deliver to a user? Do you deliver the package in which user can boot up from the CD, DVD? Yes. You don't provide cryptography? No. Then you can expect that. Users, they do have imagination. And if they don't, I have. Or somebody else that jumps into your network. Okay. Couple of things. HTTP monitoring. This is kind of cool. Because what I was doing, I was actually sending out information somewhere. Yes? If I'm, for example, using this over port 80, doing this over port 80, and I'm doing this like constantly, but if I will be doing this once a month, will you spot that one single website query? If as long as you do have implemented all the filtering rules, that's going to block everything but allow this, we are fine, then probably we will need to find the other way. But that's something that should be also thought through. Another thing, whenever I installed the service, you've probably seen that I was just able to reboot. Nobody said, ooh, be careful, Paula, this service is going to publish passwords to the network. Nobody does that, obviously, yes? Do we check for the signatures of the services file? No. God thanks, no. Yes, because we're going to have the same situation whenever we were having 64-bit operating system kernel mode drivers. Oh no, they require the digital signature. Oh no, it's going to be the same case with the service. I'm actually pretty happy that they're not signed, but we need to be aware of that. So as long as you are doing the periodical checks, using autoruns as C, command line, let's check. What kind of services do I have that are not signed and they're running? Ooh, badone, maybe this is not something that we need. So periodical checks, this is administrative's job. To implement BitLocker, this is the management's job. Talk to the management guys and say, hey, if somebody steals your laptop, do you think that you're going to earn that much? And management's like, do your job. Of course, it's a joke. I'm simplifying it. But that's something that is, of course, on the management level. Next, BitLocker TrueCrypt. Couple of technologies. That's something that is available like from the field. BitLocker, just to remind you, one thing. Whenever we are thinking BitLocker, we are thinking low-level cryptography. And I don't want to be boring here. I don't want to say, BitLocker, it's an encryption technology that is working on the lowest possible level. You hear it like every day. It's boring. The question is, how we can fight BitLocker? Can we? So let me show you one thing before we proceed. Can you see this in my hand? This kind of hanging, free, cheap, made in China USB stick. No offense to China, of course, but, you know, it's, like, super cheap. 2 gigabytes, or this kind of super useful stuff. What can you put in 2 gigabytes? I don't know, a movie? Not even that, yes? Okay. So, what is it? It's not a pen drive. It's actually a keyboard. And this is where Chinese guys are doing actually a good job. It's called rubber ducky. And it has something, everything that you see here has something to do with rubber and the ducky, right? No rubber, no rubbish, no ducky. It's actually a stupid name, yes? But it's a keyboard chipset. And if I plug it in into your computer, it's going to work. Like a keyboard, like a charm. This is what everybody is asking for. Plug and play. You plug it in and you play. Yes? Perfect. So let's just put our minds in the one situation. Imagine that somebody is doing an audit for you. Yes? And you are sitting, you are like talking to some auditor, penetration tester, or whoever. And let's say I'm gonna ask you one magical question. Can you please bring me the SLA, for example, for this kind of part of the network? And this question is very smart. Why this question is smart? It's smart because you will never leave your room. And this is what I want. I don't want you to leave a room, because what you're going to do when you leave a room? You're going to lock your console. I don't want it. I want you to set up. I want you to turn back. I want you to put your hand on the shelf, grab this document, and sit immediately because you didn't lock your screen. Isn't it that we are thinking sometimes like that? I won't lock my desktop because I am around. So funny. Okay, what is the background? Think of it. BitLocker, as I mentioned, is even invisible for the user. And the positive thing about that, so let me duplicate my desktop, it's going to work better like that. It's invisible for the user. And whenever you, for example, do a so-called hack on the BitLocker that is coming from maybe not a locked console, in that kind of situation, you will never notice that. You will never notice. Because the keys are just somewhere there. They're stored. Yes? You are logging in with PIN anyway. You're using the TPM anyway. So what I'm doing, I'm taking this small guy and I am plugging it in, and it works with, let me do like that, and it works with 7.5 seconds of the delay. So hopefully it's going to work. It's a live demo. So you see what I'm doing. New York Times. This is my laptop. What I'm going to do, I'm going to do a small hack on a BitLocker. And the only reason why it's going to be so slow is because I made it slow. So this is the scenario. Let me do one thing, though. Turn off the presentation, because the control management is passed on the presentation. So at that point, I'll be maybe do like that. And it's going to be the same. It's going to be the same situation. If you are interested, it's not a marketing. If you're interested in buying rubber ducky, you can buy it in Hack 5 shop. This is a cheap way to bypass UAC. Next. I could do this super fast. It's just for you to see. Yes, my hands are here, of course. And here we go. If you're an administrator, here we are. Yes? If you're a user, I can steal your data. I don't have to be an admin on your desktop as long as you have access to your data. So perfect. So what I just did, I just added a recovery password. 48 zeros. Super easy to guess. Super easy to calculate, by the way. And because I'm a good person, I'm adding another one. Yes? And this another one was random. And then I'm doing this for the L drive. My L drive is BitLocker protected. It might be your operating system drives. And you are just in the moment of, I'm going to give you the document. Yes? And I'm like, yeah, no rush. Yes? I mean, don't get me wrong, it's pretty stressful for me as well. Yes? So put yourself in my situation. What I'm doing right now, I'm uploading the keys that I have added to your store to my website. Yes? So, you know, just in case I forget them, they're going to be online. Don't worry. And everybody else is going to know them as well. Just a small cherry on the desert. Perfect. So I built my script right now. And then I'm logging in. Bam, bam, bam. BitLocker keys uploaded. Bam, goodbye. Off. And you are like, here we go. And I'm like, thank you. Yes? Oh, by the way, can I have your presentation, please? No. No USB sticks in my laptop. Okay. Exit. Yeah, because it's just a art. Okay. stderr.pl. Malware demo. BL keys. BitLocker keys. I'm jumping in. This underscore thing, it's the geeky name of my workstation. I jump in. What do I see? Ba-dum. BitLocker is as secure as your online management. Yes? This is the conclusion that comes out of here. If you don't think about the security as if it is a complex solution, it will always end up with something like that. Well, we had a BitLocker. Good for you. But as long as you don't lock your desktop, sorry. Okay, now I think you're going to see my buddy. Yay. Okay. Yeah, guess what happened next? This was possible because user was a local admin, yes? At some point with rubber ducky, I not necessarily care about if I will be admin or not. I care about your data. stealing your data. Yes? So as long as my USB stick can work, that's great. USB management, that's something that is super hard to implement. Not because it's hard technically, because it's hard from the management perspective. This is what I said at the beginning, yes? Talk to your management guys. Show them the rubber ducky. Say, if I do this, I get that. What would you say? Maybe we should think about USB management. Do we really need it? Do we really need it? Maybe to move data in between users. But that's something that you can do through your file server, and so on and so forth. So think about the replacement for USB and turn it off. By the way, good news, if you are on the bad side and you've got like evil thoughts in your head right now, rubber ducky, even if you implement a group policy settings that are preventing from installing devices, can be changed from the hardware ID perspective. On the rubber ducky forum, you can read how to do it. So if administrator says, oh, we are secure, our group policy is preventing device installation, and we are only using devices with the following ID. Boom, 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 boom. And you're like, what kind of IDs are those? Or Kingston. Okay, great. Rubber ducky forum. Here we go. So think about that. Okay. Next thing. That is related to an online stuff. So we are switching right now to online subject. And something that we need to discuss, that is the cheapest attack ever, the most like simple attack ever, it's a denial of service attack. Yes, that can happen to everybody. Yes. Can this happen to me? Yes, it can. Because what the denial of service attack is about the bandwidth or it's about the resources. I can overuse your bandwidth or I can use your resources. You can have like 100 CPU or your network is going to be so busy that nobody will be able to get to you. This is something that requires, I'm sorry, investment. That requires investment. More money you put in the infrastructure, less prone you're going to be for the certain situations. Is it worth it? You make your own decision. Yes? Some people, whenever they would like to attack you or not, they need to invest money as well. Distributed denial of service or denial of service in general, it's not for free. Yes? Some people serve flowers. Some people do DDoS. If you want to buy it, by the way, like the successful DDoS, search for the prices in the internet, you're going to find it. But it's around $3,000 to put the website for several hours down. Kind of nice business, I would say. Maybe I'm going to change. Okay. The thing about certain distributed denial of service concepts is that, and this is something that I would like to discuss with you, let me show you the demo. I do have in here, oh, this is basically an IIS. So I do have a website here running on IIS. And that certain website is actually very, very simple. What it does, let me jump in here. What it does, it actually manage fold, browse, sorry, not here, of course, because it's a virtual directory. It allows for two things. First of all, this website is divided into two parts. Cheap query and expensive query. When I check out how my CPU looks like, whenever I execute this website, you see it's coming up, so I'm going to switch to performance view. It went for the peak for the moment. Perfect. So what if I enter the web page and I do Control-K? For example, to display that web page several times. My CPU goes up. It's actually an example to show you that website, even if, well, it might be badly written like this one, but if you've got a regular website, what you need to be aware about is what kind of query that people can make is going to be expensive. It's going to take time. It's going to take resources. Yes? So a couple of things we should take into consideration here. As you see, it's like 100 CPU. Maybe we could investigate what kind of queries are expensive and then, based on that, make a decision if maybe we could put expensive query over here and the cheap queries, so the regular website, in our front end, which will actually allow us for the situation in which front end is always available, but the expensive queries are done over there. Maybe they're rare, but they're expensive, so if somebody spots that, I'm going to do as much as I can expensive queries to your server. This is the distributed denial of service. Okay, so if you're interested, by the way, what my website is doing, it's not really important. I'm calculating, I do have a word, and I do calculate the MD5 for it, and then I try to crack it. It's expensive. Okay, so in here, what I do have turned on, this is F12. F12, it's a friend of developers and IT administrators. What I will do, I'm going to jump to network, and I'm going to do start capturing. When I do that, I will run the website again. And based on that, we are able to calculate which website takes time to execute. You see that the first fast one website is actually opening in 390 milliseconds. The slow ones are opening super slow. As you see, almost 20 seconds. Yes? This is visible from the user perspective. But who, if not a user, is interesting to make it those to you? I spot it and I'm like, this is what I'm going to ask about a little bit too much. Yes? And then you've got like 100 CPU. Okay, so how to manage this situation? Well, solution is super simple. It's coming out of box. It's coming for free. And this is called application request routing. One of the mitigation plans. There are many. You can, for example, do this on F5, somewhere standing in the front end. Might be. But you can also do this using the solution that is out of box almost, because IRR, which is an IIS module, is available for free from IIS.net website. Okay, so let me show you that configuration. So this is my poor, poor server. And let me jump to my web server, though, which is going to be here. Pam pam. And first of all, what I need to do, so this is how you will do it. So let me show you the steps. You take the website, you take the website files that you would like to see to be available in front end. The slow ones stay in the back. So we do have, I do have this website here. So I got fast one and some default web page. So this is this one that was loading fast. And I am implementing that, so let me copy it. And I am implementing that to that website that I had before. Here we go. So now website, we can say it's implemented. Perfect. At some point, we also need to jump into application request routing, which is accessible from the server level. And then we go to IIS, application request routing cache. Then what you need to do, you need to turn on proxy, so enable proxy. You can leave the default settings if you are not in the mood for configuring it in an advanced way. Just at least please see how it works, because it's a super cool solution to make you a little bit less prone to the situation like, for example, distributed denial of service. Okay, so we enabled proxy. It is just a checkbox. Check. Then I'm going to, on the right side, URL rewrite. And then I'm going to create a rule. So the blank rule with name, let's call it Tehed. Requested URL matches the pattern, regular expression. I'm going to specify slow and asterisk. So every time somebody asks with the website for slow one, which is the pattern, forward these guys to, and then I need to type the following URL, HTTP 10, 10, 10, 10. This was my server that I hit at the beginning. Then DOS, wait a moment, this was DDoS, like that. And then I need to specify where to hit, slow one, DLL. Perfect, no typo, apply. So we are all set, to be sincere. And now we can ask, maybe I could do this from this website, this server. Now we could ask for their website, and then you will see that the resources, so maybe let me minimize it, it's going to be a little bit more visible at that point. The resources is going to be executed, so this, the hard website, on the domain controller. So we do have this website here. Let me open up the domain controller window so that we could check out the performance again. So this is the domain controller. And let me minimize it like that. So everything's going to, everybody's going to see the same thing. I'm going to go to performance tab. And as you see, it is like it is. So it's just running. And then I'm going to enter that certain web page. Perfect. You see, I'm hitting 200. So I'm hitting the front-end server. Front-end server responded, but the hard request is executed on the other server in the network. You still see 100% of CPU, but that's fine. We can sometimes live with that as long as our website is actually working and it's doing fine in front of our customers. Cheap solution, for free, to be implemented ad hoc if you are experiencing some problems with the performance. Okay, guys, if you got some questions about that, please join me after the session, okay? I'm happy to answer everything. Maybe not everything, but things that are related to whatever. You haven't said, yeah. Okay, thanks. Why this was possible, yes? Well, if all internet is going to be standing in front of us and they're going to say, we're going to DDoS you today, you have no choice to survive, I'm sorry. DDoS, it's such a simple attack, yes? We need to obviously make some investments. We need to think what is important. And we need to discuss with management, again, how long we can be offline if it's about, for example, our services. So our website, how long we can be off. If they say for a couple of hours, then apply appropriate mitigation to be off at an acceptable level for a couple of hours. It always costs money. DDoS, remember, they always cost money as well. So if you are like super protected, people need to invest big amount of money to attack you. Don't get me wrong, but Poland, for example, was a fantastic example of how to prove yourself that you are a successful DDoS maker. As I mentioned, you can buy it. Some people put down really popular websites just to show up and say, see, I did it. I can do this to you as well for that amount of dollars, yes? So maybe you're going to be a target for this kind of situation. You never know. Okay, so this is the concept. Know the expensive queries. This is the conclusion. Monitor your app. Know what is expensive. Know what costs you resources on the server side. Perfect. Unpatched systems and applications. Okay, let me ask a very uncomfortable question right now. Are you ready? Yes? Ready for uncomfortable question? I don't know what I'm going to ask about. Okay, who uses Java? Put your hands up. Maybe 40% of the room. Okay, perfect. Another uncomfortable question. Who hates Java? Okay, almost everybody. You don't raise your hand because you are a Java developer? Okay. What is the conclusion that comes out of that? We are discussing these things like Windows, blue screen, vulnerabilities. Yeah, okay. But a lot of vulnerabilities are actually coming from the applications. Yes? So we need to think about what kind of applications we are using. Yes? We do have Adobe, pretty popular. We do have, at that point, Java applications, super popular. Java signed vulnerability that is available right now in Metasploit, it works also on Windows 8. And the reason why it works on Windows 8, because this is Java that is problematic, not because Windows 8 is problematic. If you want to have it, just use Metasploit and do what I have actually to show you. So the concept for me right now is going to be the not super secure setup. And whenever I'm jumping into a customer's infrastructure, if I would like to put you down, I will check out a couple of things. First of all, terminal servers. Terminal servers are the worst patch servers ever. Why? Because users remain connected. Users want to use app. It's in the line of business. So to patch a server, that's something that is problematic. I'm not saying we are not doing it. It's at least problematic. It needs to be planned. Sometimes it's planned a little bit too late. Ta-da! Domain controllers, because they are important. I mean, no comment needed. Clusters, because they are important as well. Yes? You are always afraid that whenever you patch the cluster like that, the other one may be down at the same moment of time. And then we are down. Okay, yeah. So clusters are another resource that is not patched. Luckily, in 2012, there is a patching support for clusters implemented, so we no longer have these problems in 2012. Server, of course. But what I would like to show you is actually a solution that is based on not patched environment. And I'm going to use for that the simplest possible vulnerability ever. So it's not a session about exploits. It's not a session about exploits. I just would like to show you the point of entry and what we can do with that. Okay. Dun, 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 dun. I don't have white gloves, but I'm going to wash my hands, I promise. It's a Linux backtrack, of course. I'm kidding. Everybody uses it for penetration tests. But what I do have here, let me actually make it a little bit bigger. I do have a Java signed applet. So this is this concept of the small vulnerability. What I'm going to do, I'm going to prepare the simplest link ever. So actually, don't let me go to the explanation here. I will just create a web server that contains Java that's going to be executed on a certain server. That's it, yes? Not a big fancy thing. It's not my goal to show you how cool I'm going to be if I will be administrator. No. What I would like to show you is the point of entry. So here we go. We've got localhost specified 10.10.99. This is myself. Local port doesn't really matter. What matters, though, it's the comfort for a victim. We need to care about victim's comfort. And I'm going to specify the URI path that's going to be the generic one so that the user does not have to type. Of course, it doesn't sound trustworthy, yes? Okay, we are done. Launch. Pam, 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 server started. Okay, so we do have that server started. And at that certain point, what I'm going to do, I'm going to enter that certain link. So I'm going to do this from, could it be Mozilla? Internet Explorer works as well. That's something that I have open by now. Perfect. So I'm entering that. This is something that pops up just because my applet is not signed. If I would like to sign it, it's going to be the same story. I can buy a certificate for signing that and sign it, even if I'm evil. Yes? So I will just click accept and run. So we do have a session right now. Ooh, this graphical Linux-ish things. it's important. So we are already in the certain workstation. Matterpreter, interact, command prompt. Perfect. So as you see, what I do have in here is the prompt of Mozilla Firefox. Whoever clicked on that link, I can always check it out. Might be. Yes? It might be somewhere in the email. Somebody sends internal insider guy. Yes? Click here. Check it out. Won't you trust Anna? So this is the story. Okay. So what I will do right now, because my goal is to show you one simple thing. How to inject the rootkit. What does it mean to inject the rootkit? Yes? So this is the concept. And what do we get with a rootkit? And the point of entry is very, very simple. Nutpatch system. And I could do this using all these techniques that I showed you like before. Rubber ducky, offline mode, vulnerability, whatever. My goal is to get inside. Okay. So at that point, what I need to do, net user, and I'm going to create users going to be called hacker. How come? With the password, add. Got it. Net local group. Group. Administrators. We got it. Okay. Net local group administrators, hacker. Add. Perfect. Net local group administrators. Let's check out if the hacker is added. Just to make sure, we've got a hacker here. Perfect. So at that point, what I can do, I can open the console, our desktop, 10.10.10.251, which is my victim. And then I'm going to authenticate myself as a hacker. Preparing your desktop. Perfect. I mean, we don't need to do this hackerish, darkened stuff using the console, yes? We just have a GUI here. Okay, let's close this default things. At that point, I can connect to the disk. I can simplify it a little bit. I do have my disk with the tools connected here. I could do net use, z, whatever, and then connect to my system that, for example, is on Linux. I do have some tools uploaded already. So what I want to show you is a couple of things. First of all, I'm going to run command prompt as administrator. And the only reason why I'm doing this, because I can. Here we go. On my Z drive, what do I have inside? So let me switch to x86. I do have something that is called Windows Credentials Editor. And it's a fantastic solution that allows me to read the credentials that are stored in a memory accessible to me in a clear text of everybody that is logged in on that terminal server. Here we go. You're wondering what kind of users do we have? Let me have a look at that. Hacker, password, Freddy, administrator. Ooh, domain administrator was logged on. Perfect. I do have also some user. Awesome. That's what I'm saying. Terminal servers are the worst patch servers ever. But the something that you get is immediately rewarding. When you get inside, you got all the stuff. And this is kind of sad, I would say, because this is the resource that we should really care about. It's really important to us. But at the same time, it's the worst secure server in the network. You see the problem? Maybe we should figure out some ways how we can manage patching terminal servers. Maybe we should pay a little bit more attention to it. And to be sincere, I'm making in one year, over 200 flights, flying and visiting customers, consulting on security. That's a lot. And I'm seeing these things. It doesn't come from It comes from what I see. Terminal server. Okay, guys. So the party is over. Let's do the hard stuff. Perfect. So we do have all the things. As long as, by the way, the users are connecting using the network resources, you're going to have the password of the users as well. There is a tool that I'm going to discuss tomorrow on my session 8:30 in the morning that my team is helping with preparation. It's called Mimikatz. Mimikatz allows you to list passwords of the users that are authenticated using the network shares. How fun. I'm in file server. It's a fantastic place for the administrator to be in. Ooh, what they are thinking about. You're going to know all the user's secrets. Okay, guys. But what I would like to show you at that point is actually I'm going to run psexec minus s minus I minus d cmd.exe. And the reason why I need it is because I would like to inject a rootkit. Let me change very quickly the font that I have so that everybody can see the thing. Here we go. My rootkit is actually on Z drive. It's called KeepIt. I'm going to inject a couple of modules to KeepIt. First of all, DCOM. DCOM is actually a module that is allowing us to directly modify things in kernel. So if I want that, I'm going to have it. Sounds like a female's sentence, yes? I want it. Got it. Life is so nice. Okay. Another module that's going to be used for hiding the processes. And another module that I have is actually used for, let me type it, key BDL, for key logging. Perfect. So here we go. My rootkit is already loaded. I would like to show you, because this is the rootkit injection is over, but of course we need to be beneficial from the effect of it. I dumped these passwords with a reason. Because over here, we do have an innocent Freddy Krueger. Freddy Krueger, he is just a print operator. He is just a user. I would like to use Freddy's Krueger session to show you what Freddy, after the rootkit injection, can do. Perfect. So, at that point, I'm going to switch to Linux machine again. And then I'm going to open another session, Air Desktop, to 10, 10, 10, to 51. Bam. Freddy, to the domain. Freddy is a domain user using magical password. Perfect. So rootkit is already injected. And now I can move to the drive with a rootkit. And because Freddy, he's an evil user, he would like to be able to elevate yourself to whoever he wants. Freddy is Freddy. The only thing I will need for that small operation It's actually the process ID of the command line, which is 6032. Perfect. So at that point, what I will do, I will use the kippit rootkit, and then I'm going to specify PGS parameter. PGS allows me to elevate myself. So PGS, sorry, PGS allows myself to elevate to, and I will show you who. I love Microsoft. Okay. By the way, so that you've forgotten. Yes. Okay. So we've got anti-authority system. Yes. If you want to downgrade yourself, that's obviously possible. I just need to do RT, which is the return thing. Yes. So keep it. Okay, got it. PGS, RT, and then basically at that point, I'm going to be a Freddy again. If you want to inject yourself in somebody else, for example, in administrator. So at this point, I will need to jump into the administrator's console. So administrator is just opening something for himself. So this is this machine. You remember? We have actually injected it. Administrator is like, woohoo, command line is so cool. At that point, we can check out what is the process ID of administrator CMD. It's 2728. Perfect. How do we know it? Well, of course, we don't know it from here. We know it from somewhere else. The interesting thing is that if Freddy would like to go to Task Manager and Freddy would like to click Show Processes from All Users, access is denied, yes? This is so funny because you can do this with task lists in the verbose mode. Security by obscurity. This is always like, this is cute. Okay, users. So here we have administrator is logged on. One is the domain, one is the local one. And then we can verify what is the session of administrator. So at that point, we do have an active session, which is ID number 2. Perfect. So at that point, what we can do, we can say, and the administrator's CMD was 2728, we can actually do the task list in the verbose mode. And that's something that we're going to do technically stream to C, users, Freddy, desktop, head txt. Perfect. So we do have here head txt. And then we can check based on the session ID of the administrator what is the what is the process ID of the administrator. Security by security. You see that? I could dump it, yes, but I was not able to release the processes from all users. Something is wrong here. Okay, so at that point, what we need to do, we need to search for the session of administrator. So let's search for CMD's processes running. Here we go. Let's check for what we've got in here. So here we go. This is CMD, but this is my CMD. CMD. Oh, here we go. CMD, and here we go. Session number 4. At this point, we've got 6032, so this is our. But 2728, which is session number 2, this is the PID of administrator, yes? So making the long story short, what I need to do, I need to take, let me close and open up the console again. Pam pam, I will do that. It's going to be a little bit clean. Rootkit, I am right now on the, I'm crossing the red line, so it's better to have everything clear. So keep it one more time. And then what I need to do, I need to put over here, first of all, so PST, I need to use the identity of my CMD, which was 6032. Just a quick thing. Processes, here we go, CMD, 1492 this time. So it is going to be 1492. And I need to use administrator's CMPID, which was 2728, as you remember. So at that point, I am administrator. Whatever you want. Bam, bam, bam. Freddy, we go. Administrator, we go. Yes? You see the... Do you like it, by the way? Is it boring, by the way? You're like, oh, okay. Come on, just relax, it's Tehid, yes? Okay, perfect. So, the last thing. At that certain stage, what do we need to do? We need to have some fun. I mean, hackers have fun, yes? So at this point, I'm going to jump into my web server again. The terminal server again. So this is me. And I'm going to lock my desktop. So, ba-da-da, lock. And I'm logging in as administrator. Of course, if I type password, you see that the password is not correct. Awesome. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to patch the memory of that machine using the rootkit. So, at that point, what I need to do, I need to, and let me close the console again, elevate myself to a local system, but that's something that I already showed you. So I will do this very quickly. So here we got keep it, and at that stage we've got PGS. And let me check out what is my process ID one more time. So here we go. We've got 4948. 4948. 4948. Perfect. Who am I? So I'm anti-authority system. That's great. And at that stage, I'm going to use keep it again. But what I will do, PBP and search for the string administrator. And I'm verifying if we do have some passwords for administrator. By the way, you see, 5 passwords blanked. Tum, pum, pum. Pum, pum. Yes. Okay, so don't get me wrong, but at that certain point, I do have voice support for that specific situation. And if you don't mind, let me play it. It will take only a minute, but I think it's worth it. And just a moment. I don't know this guy, by the way. So he's 5 minutes of fame. Okay, yes, why this was possible? So we had a demo, Holy Grail, Holy Local System. This was possible because of the Java. So Java and the other applications are not necessarily secure, and we definitely should think about how to mitigate that risk. Where do we run Java, and why on a terminal server? Well, because we have to. When we have to, think about the mitigation plan, how we are able to manage this situation. Think about the education for users so that they are not necessarily clicking in the certain links. Yes, because my vulnerability was coming out of that. Of course, there are also many other vulnerabilities. Not even that, maybe misconfiguration that we need to pay attention to. So the very major conclusion that comes out of that is that please do periodical checks. Yes? Verify what do you have running on certain operating systems. To discover rootkits, it's not the simplest thing ever. And I wanted to scare you just a little bit, to show you the possibility that came out of the misconfiguration, vulnerability, and a couple of other technical problems that were, and we have still, in our infrastructures. Of course, DCOM, that requires hard privileges. But that's something that you can gain through many vulnerabilities, and at some point you will be local system just like that. Because somebody clicks somewhere, because there is a new stuff that is not patched and so on. And it's not Microsoft that is bad. It's just, as I said at the beginning, a piece of software. It's just a piece of software. Of course, there are only human beings on the back writing that code. Things may not be tested. In one of the million examples, things may not work. And then you found it. Yeah, so that's something that we should definitely be aware about. Okay, manage all updates. Please check out what do you have running. Know, at least know the vulnerabilities. Okay, the last thing. I'm doing the small service on Tehets. So, I ask the question. Do you keep on your FTP server portable apps? Do you? Some installers? So the problem is that we have, and 12 of 15 IT administrators said, yeah, we do. And they were happy about it. And I was like, okay, that's weird. The problem is that we have in our infrastructures that we are having all these repositories, yes? Sometimes it's a repository for a user and so on. Last year, I was discussing about checking for the file signature before you double click on it. But I would like to point to you one simple thing. We've got a lot of portable apps. Yes, users are using portable apps. don't get me wrong. I can tell you immediately. The solution for that is AppLocker. So this is the problem that can be easily mitigated. But not everywhere AppLocker is implemented. So as long as the user can click portable app, double click, things may go wrong. So, another thing. And I was talking this time for developers. You are wondering what kind of question was that? Very obvious. Do you have UAC turned on, do you? And they said, well, and there was just a lot of explanations like, well, we do. And I'm like, okay, but are you a local admin? And they were like, yes, we do. And this situation comes from one single thing. Visual Studio requires, ask, to be sincere, maybe just when you go out from this session, ask your friendly developer, if there is one that exists, of course, but ask your friendly developer, what do you think about Visual Studio running as a regular user? Is this a useful tool or no? Of course you can configure it to be running as a user, of course, but this requires a time. Time is money. I want to write software. That's why you run Visual Studio as an admin. And I'm not saying it's bad, it's fully understood, but it brings some additional security risk to the field. So, what did they say? 13 or 15, they said, maybe they thought that I'm like, you know, asking a weird question, or I don't know. Okay, so what is the story that comes here? The story is actually very, very simple. And let me basically switch to a duplicated mode right now. Because I would like to show you my infector. My infector, it's actually doing one simple thing. So first of all, maybe the website. So SCDER malware demo. These are the folders that you have over here. My infector, it's not requiring you to be admin. No, my infector is going to take your all files that are in the documents folder and it's going to upload this to my FTP server. As long as you open Zoomit, which is the one that I'm using to enlarging all the stuff that I'm showing to you. So at this point, I'm going to close Zoomit. For that moment, I'm going to do one simple thing. In install, I can verify what I do have in here. And at this point, I don't have a Zoomit. So what I will do, I'm going to quickly upload Zoomit to the folder because my infector is searching for a new stuff that is on the FTP server. As long as your users do have a right access to the FTP server, they can do the same stuff. So I'm going to put it here. Zoomit is copied. Bum, 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 bum. Faster, 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 faster. Yay, go baby. 89% copying. Okay, we got it. Zoomit. Perfect. So I'm firing up my infector at that point. Don't laugh. If you're a developer, you have a full right to laugh. Okay? It's an ugly app. Period. So what I'm doing, I'm checking out. First of all, I'm connecting to my FTP server. I'm checking out what new appeared. And if it's new, I'm going to infect it with my workload. Yes? So all files at some point on the FTP servers, all files are going to be infected with some workload. And as you see, I found the Zoomit, the new one. So what I'm doing, I'm taking that Zoomit and I'm infecting it and I'm uploading this to your FTP server. Every file that you have on your FTP server is going to have my workload. This is the thing. We don't really check out, we are not really thinking about this kind of possibility. It takes a moment because our network is not super slow. But as you see, downloaded, infected. I like these positive messages in my software. Downloaded, infected successfully. Ha! And it's going to be uploaded in a moment. Yes? And at that point, if I run Zoomit, if I download Zoomit from the web page, and if I open it up, you're going to see that that certain Zoomit is going to actually upload all TXT files uploaded on the website. Perfect. So we are all set, yes? So we can check out how the certain Zoomit is going to work. So we can refresh that website. Here we go. This is our Zoomit. We can use the browser for that, or we can use FTP for that. Doesn't really matter. I'm going to do this like that. So I'm downloading Zoomit. Mm-hmm. So this is a regular Zoomit. It's going to work like a regular application, yes? So this is the scenario here. Perfect. Bum, bum, bum. Oh, this is annoying. 3%. Yeah, replace it. I already have Zoomit, but it's going to be bad Zoomit right now. So I'm opening that Zoomit here. As you see, it's working a little bit longer. The Zoomit is fired up right now, by the way. So if I want, I can enlarge stuff. But at some point, if we jump to the parent directory, I get this new folder, underscore, as you remember. This is the stuff that, this is the name of my workstation. And I have everything that I had in my document folder on the FTP server, just because you opened Zoomit. If I jump to prove this to you, to users, Paula, in this case, this is VSS, Windows to go, recovery key, everything. So you can browse through my private files if you want. Of course, there is nothing that requires me to be ashamed. Party pictures are somewhere else. Okay, summary, guys. Hackers not halted. I showed you all the situations that are in the edge in between management and IT pros, yes? What I would like you to take out from this session, all the techniques that I showed you, that's all fine. But please, please, lesson learned. Next week, when you will be at work, discuss with your management the improvements that you have, and I bet you have in your head, yes? Plan it. Build up the business-wise arguments. Go, discuss. Make this, just give it a try. Maybe they're going to say, like, we are curing patients. We are not working in security. Maybe you're going to be like that. But maybe you're going to succeed. And hopefully next year, when we will see each other in the same room, you will be like, oh, I did it already. My network is a little bit better. If at some point you would like to grab interesting resources, I'm leaving this link, I'm leaving this slide open right now. Please come to my session 8:30 in the morning. Please as well, bring a cup of coffee because it's going to be hardcore. Passwords, debugging, and all this stuff. I hope you enjoy it. If you got some questions, jump inside and please fill out the evaluations at the end. Thank you so much.